Welcome to the Victory Podcast.
Hey, Victors. Welcome to this episode of The Victory Show. If this is the first time you're joining us, I'm Rachel League with Bestseller by Design. Our founder, Travis Cody, is the best-selling author of 16 books, and we've had the privilege of helping hundreds of business consultants, founders, and entrepreneurs write and publish their own best-selling books as well. Through that journey, we've discovered a fascinating pattern. Most businesses really struggle to break past the seven-figure revenue mark. On this show, I sit down with some of the world's most successful CEOs, leaders, and business owners to uncover the strategies they used to scale way past that mark so you can do the same. So get ready for some deep insights and actionable takeaways that you can implement in your life and business starting now. Today's guest is Dan Glickberg, a fourth-generation entrepreneur, investor, and operator whose career bridges the legacy of brick-and-mortar retail and the innovation of emerging consumer brands. Dan spent nearly a decade as the vice president and director of Fairway Market, his family's iconic New York City grocery chain. During his tenure, he helped grow the business from 3 stores generating $200 million in revenue to 12 locations exceeding $700 million in revenue, overseeing everything from unloading trucks to strategic growth initiatives, corporate governance, and raising capital in both public and private markets. He left shortly before Fairway's IPO on the NASDAQ. After Fairway, Dan became an investor on the Food Network show, Food Fortunes, which launched him into the world of venture capital. Today, he's a partner at C2G Ventures and an investor and consultant supporting retail technology and consumer packaged goods companies. Dan focuses on partnering with founders who are building highly effective, differentiated products ready for significant growth. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today, Rachel.
You grew up in a fourth generation family business. What was it like to be part of Fairway Market from such an early age?
It was tough, right? Like family business, it's not easy. Everybody will tell you that being in business with family is great all the time. It's definitely not. It makes your family dynamics so much more complicated than you can ever imagine. And, you know, think about it from the perspective of sometimes you need a break from your family, whether it's school, work, moving somewhere. When you get into business with your family, it is your family 24/7, right? And then on top of that, to a certain extent, that business will become who you are. It defines you and it really changes your perspective on who you are and sometimes doesn't even allow you to become your own person because you just kind of fold into the family business and you can be underneath a parent or a cousin or a sibling, their shadow, and actually never be able to grow out of it yourself.
So when you did first join the company professionally, what were some of your first responsibilities? Who in the business or in your family were you working with? And how did that shape your understanding of the grocery business?
Yeah, so I was right underneath my father, which was great in certain aspects. I think if you defined his skill set at the peak of his powers, he was probably the greatest grocery merchandiser in the world. I know that that doesn't sound sexy at all, but it was a very unique skill in a couple $1 trillion market. So mm-hmm. It gives you an understanding of the capabilities and potential when he unleashed those powers in our business. So really what I started off doing was unloading trucks, slicing deli meat, working in the frozen food department. And overall, what the expectation was learning the business from the ground up, just like my father did, and then eventually taking over the business from him. What was interesting about this time period was I came into the business straight out of college and we had 3 partners in the business. My father was one of them. And then about a year after I joined, we had private equity buy into the business and they essentially bought out 2 of the 3 partners. So we went from a small family-run business with no debt to now a business that was ready to scale, we thought first regionally, and then potentially nationally with the help of private equity and an excessive amount of debt, right? And what does debt do to a business? It puts pressure on it, right? So we started to feel that pressure every single day. Mm-hmm. We went from a business that was going to open up a new store probably every 3 to 5 years, take out a little bit of debt to help pay off, right? Whatever we needed to open up that store. And then we were not going to open up another store until all of that debt was paid off. So we had private equity come in And the most important thing in their eyes was, is this management team scalable? And that was kind of my first crash course in being able to identify what a scalable management team is, and then also understanding the importance of people. Because you can have great operators, but at the same time, if you don't have great people who can work together to really build something, you're not going to get very far.
What does that management team that can achieve scale look like?
It is a mix of both a lot of experience and probably not enough experience. So the people on that team that have a lot of experience will do all of the necessary blocking and tackling, and they will continue to propel the business in much the same way that it first became successful. And then you do need some new blood on that team who was not necessarily indoctrinated into the business in the same way as their seniors, and they will be able to understand how markets are shifting and what needs to change within the business in order to scale.
Were you involved in the discussion around potentially taking on the private equity funding investment? And if so, what were your thoughts at the time? Were you happy about it after? I mean, it's clear that the business went on to be successful, but like you said, I know it comes with its own challenges and stressors to have that pressure put on.
Yeah, so I was not involved in the discussions about whether or not to bring in outside capital, nor was I really involved in the actual negotiation with the private equity partners. That was really amongst the three partners. And to give you an idea of how tough of a negotiator my father is, particularly when he has most of the leverage in a situation, those negotiations went on for, I think, like 4 years. So it was a long negotiation. They started, I think, my sophomore year in college, and they didn't end until my first year in the business. Yeah. So to me, it was probably not as difficult of a decision, right? And I think the consequences were not as difficult for me as they were for my father, because even though I was around the business and working a little bit in the business growing up, I didn't have that tie to the business that a founder, right? And, you know, even though my dad did not really, he was not the founder of the business, my great grandfather was, he essentially was like a founder because with him, it was the first time that the business ended up expanding. He had much deeper ties to that business than I did. You know, I think both from time wise and then also longer period of time working in the business. And from my perspective, I was actually pretty happy that the private equity partners came in. I think if you haven't been a founder before, there is an enormous weight on a founder's shoulders, particularly when they are writing all the checks and they take on a certain extent of personal liability, right? Both legally and then also financially. So from my perspective, the private equity partners were taking a decent amount of risk off of my family's plate, which I was happy about, and then also giving us the potential for tremendous upside. If we were able to scale the business, we were still going to own a substantial chunk of that business, and we would be able to reap those benefits. Over the years after having left the business, I'm probably more thankful now that they came into the business than I was when they initially came in. And having perspective on the dynamics within those business and the management team, and also my personal relationship with my father, my feeling is if our private equity partners never left or never came into that business, I probably would have had to leave at some point, and the business probably would have failed at some point.
Interesting. Yeah. The infusion of outside capital, I know it comes with pros and cons, and it's great to hear that you think it was in the end the right decision to help you guys scale. And retail is such, it can be such a tough business. What were some of the challenges you faced as you were expanding?
Yeah, they were pretty basic, right? General organization, how to run a meeting, follow through. How do you take your operations and make them consistent across 4 stores? 5 stores, 10 stores, 20 stores. That is really, I learned so much about what not to do over the 9 years I was in that business, way more than I probably learned about what to do. And a lot of that was really a commentary on the management team. And I was fortunate enough to have enough autonomy within that business to say to myself, hey, I want to learn these three things this year. So let me go and focus on this. And a lot of it was trial and error. And again, having that leash to make errors without losing my job gave me so much more experience than I ever would have gotten if somebody held my hand throughout the entire process. And, you know, I think one thing that I took away, which really probably completely changed my trajectory as a person and also within business, was I idolized my father growing up. I mean, just like idolized him. I saw what he did and just the force and the power that he brought into every single room in that company to me was just mind-blowing and to a certain extent mesmerizing. And probably like 2 years into the journey with the private equity partners, they sat me down and I was like 25-year-old kid, right? Thought he was on top of the world. And they sat me down and they said, hey, we want you to run this business in 3 to 5 years, which sounded great at face value. But now with perspective, I know that there's no way the public equity markets would ever accept a 28, 29-year-old CEO of a grocery chain, like just wouldn't happen. And that was, again, I think a little bit of a commentary on me and their belief in me and my skill set, but a heck of a lot more of a commentary about the management team and just the unscalability there. And what they told me was, you have everybody's respect in this business. But if you really want to run this company, everybody has to like you. And you, they didn't say this, but my takeaway from it was, you are not your father and you cannot run this business like your father does. You need to run it like yourself. And people need to like you in addition to respecting you, right? And that really comes into an empathetic role that a founder, a leader, or a for-hire CEO needs to carry with them, right? Because nobody's life is perfect and you have things going on at home sometimes that nobody knows about, and you carry that into work. And you need to figure out how people are going to like you enough where they can set some of that aside and you can get them to do what you want them to do.
How did you think about, either from your experience in cultures like that or in building that yourself, what that looks like?
So when I run businesses, I really install 3 points of culture within a business, and they're very basic. One is extreme transparency. You have to work in reality. If you do not work in reality, that's just as bad as making decisions off of bad information or numbers. The second thing is clear and direct communication, because people have to understand what you are saying, right? Very simple, basic language. And the third is, no one should ever be afraid to ask a question. Because when you don't ask a question and you don't understand something, that's when big mistakes happen.
Did people ever ask you questions that stumped you or caused you to rethink a situation? And how did you change your strategy from there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that listening is an extremely important part of any leader's job. And I think, first of all, if somebody asks me a question and I don't know the answer, I just tell them I don't know. Right. And then maybe somebody else in the room knows, or we can go back and think about it or do a little bit of research to figure out what the answer is. No, but I would say that in conversations, particularly with businesses that I'm not completely familiar with and have not worked within those businesses for a long time, I'm always just doing information gathering and I'm doing a heck of a lot more questioning and listening than I am giving directives or telling people exactly what to do. But there are some very basic business principles that I will install in companies, right? And those I can talk about for hours. I try and keep it down to a couple minutes at maximum. But like, people say things to me every day where I just completely rethink about what I've been doing or how I've been doing or how to fix the solution. So like, it happens all the time. It's just part of my process.
Was there a time in your journey growing the business from 200 to 700 million in sales, I'm sure there was, where you hit a bump in the road, but an example maybe that comes to mind where you were able to navigate that challenge effectively and overcome it?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest bump in the road that I hit while we were growing the business was my parents got separated. So, and that was really devastating and it put me on a much different path than I otherwise probably would have gone down. And that all happened probably like a week or two after I had the sit down with our private equity partners, right? And I went from thinking, you know what, things will always just work out to, well, I have to make them work out, right? Because this is not the situation that I thought I was going to be in. And I sat in an environment for like 5 years where I was completely alone. I would say very, very emotionally uncomfortable, right? I did not feel safe at all within that environment. I don't think I was the only person who did not feel safe in that environment, but I felt unsafe in that environment, both from a business perspective and then also from a personal perspective. And I went from, okay, I'm going to run this company in 3 to 5 years, and here's the path and here's the process, to, well, what if things don't work out? And what's going to be my exit plan here? And what I started to do was get a much better understanding, because I had a good understanding of physically what was going on in those stores, but I didn't have a great grasp of what financially was going on in those stores. And I started to focus a little bit more on the financials, and then ultimately spent probably the last 3 years of my time there marrying the two together. And I came to the conclusion that I do not think that this will end well, and I need to get out at the appropriate time. And that's what I did. And I planned my exit about 3 years before I left the business. And I ultimately thought that they would run into a liquidity crunch. Now, during that time period, and I give all of the credit in the world to our private equity partners, they were able to get an IPO off the ground. I left about 2 weeks before the IPO, stepped down from the board, heard from almost everybody that I knew that I was a young, dumb kid who had no idea what he was doing. And I was fortunate enough to sell my stock when our lockup on the stock expired. And if you know anything about the story, it's actually gone bankrupt twice since then. And when things started going downhill at Fairway, I actually had the CEO of a public company come to me and said, like, so what he said to me was, you knew the entire time, didn't you? And I was just like, yeah, but I couldn't tell anybody, right? And I learned so much about patience, right? And the process of questioning your decisions and working through that questioning until you become confident enough that you've made the right decision. And when you know you have made the right decision, holding to that decision, regardless of what anybody else says to you about it.
As an outsider and having been in the business before, what do you think was the reason for the bankruptcy issues that Fairway faced?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it was an unscalable management team, right? We just were not able to put processes in place because a lot of the people had been there for 20 or 30 years, and they didn't want an outsider's perspective. They didn't want the help. You know, I put almost all of the blame on management and the company. And then with private equity coming in, part of the problem was that they did not have any experience in grocery. Like, they did not invest in consumer facing companies. So they were not able to step in and fix things, right? And that was a big learning for me: invest in what you know, right? And, you know, like, all that debt really just accelerated everything and poured gasoline on it. But at the end of the day, I think that everybody forgets that founders, management teams, it's a decision to take the money. You're not forced into taking money. And once you take money, there is a pretty strict set of rules that you must abide by. And a lot of founders and a lot of management teams are not ready to abide by those rules. They're just not. I understand in this environment, it's hard to start a business without raising capital. But also, not every business is meant to become the next unicorn. Not every business is going to get to hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. You as a founder, you have to look inside yourself and say, are you prepared to make this your life? Are you prepared, if you get a phone call at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday, are you prepared to pick up that call and potentially start your day working to figure out and fix a really, really big problem? You know, if you're not, there's nothing wrong with making a really nice lifestyle business. You do not have to try and hyperscale, right? It's really about you, yourself, your goals and your wants and your desires. And you have to have a really, really good understanding of yourself before you set out becoming an entrepreneur and deciding how you want to grow your business, if you want to grow it at all.
Tell us a little bit about your foray into investing. You mentioned what I think is a really excellent point of investing in what you know, and you have that operator lens that you bring to the investing side. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I didn't necessarily want to become an investor. And even today, I don't necessarily consider myself an investor. I consider myself more of an operator that happens to invest. Because I can't take that operations hat off. I've tried and it just doesn't work for me. So, you know, I left Fairway and I was pretty depressed. I'd been depressed just probably for like a number of years, mostly because of the fracturing of my family and then having to deal with that in my face every single day. And I was lucky enough to get a phone call from Food Network, and they were looking to do a Shark Tank type show like everybody else was back then, because Shark Tank had become so successful. And I was an investor on the one and only season of Food Fortunes, which you probably didn't see like most of the rest of the world, which is why I was canceled after one season. But that actually ended up bringing me quite a bit of deal flow. So the show initially aired on a Monday night, and Tuesday morning, I'd have 10 to 20 emails in my inbox from people around the country saying, will you invest in my business? Will you help me? I need advice. And that really launched me into investing in consumer. And from there, I actually shifted most of my focus into retail technology. So, you know, that I felt was actually a better fit for my skill set, because I understood the inner workings of a grocery store. And just when you take a look at the gross margin profile, it just for your benefit, when I see a startup's gross margin, I usually discount it by, I don't know, 1,000 to 2,000 basis points, just understanding how margins are calculated and what goes above and below the line. But, you know, I found a real passion for retail technology. A gross profit margin profile is much better. And I think that the exits in those types of businesses are much more commensurate with the risk. So, you know, I started off actually investing in a company called Afresh Technologies, and they use AI for predictive ordering for perishable departments. And that was something that I did hand-to-hand combat in for a couple of years and understood how difficult it was for you to predict what your needs were going to be for perishable goods that go bad in a couple of days. And, you know, what I typically do when I invest in a business is I am there for whatever a company needs, whatever a founder needs, whatever his or her team members need at whatever time they need me. So it's really up to them how much or how little do you want to utilize me. And I found that investing is fun to a certain extent, but I can't, it's hard for me to put away operating, because it's just something that I'm so passionate about and something that I enjoy so much.
You're every VC's dream. You have the ability to do the investing, but then also you bring that operator's lens. I mean, so many venture capital firms bring on operating partners. The VC that I worked with had them as well, because it's such an invaluable resource to have somebody who can connect with the portcos, actually bring tangible value outside of just capital. And particularly in consumer packaged goods, which is so operationally complex, in addition to being capital intensive, I'm sure that that was invaluable to your portfolio companies.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, because even though we were a rather large business in $200 million in revenue, we were only three stores. So we still operated very much like a startup. So I understand the scaling. I understand the issues with businesses that are small, some of the operational expertise that they need, and how you can actually install it into companies when they're very, very young, sometimes with inexperienced operators. And, you know, I've found that I'm also probably in a little bit of a messed up way, very comfortable being uncomfortable, because I just sat in an environment that was very uncomfortable for a long period of time. So when businesses hit bumps in the road, that to me is normal operations, which is something that I think is a little bit different for most people. It can be difficult for operators who have only operated in large businesses to understand how much different it is operating in smaller businesses as they scale, and they can help put in best practices, not even necessarily install best practices, but tell founders and teams, here are best practices, but then they have trouble installing them into the businesses because that is just the way that they know how to operate and they've actually never put them in place before.
So Dan, you've done a lot both operationally and on the investing side. What does the next chapter look like for you?
Well, after you asked, so I went back into operations for the first time about a year ago, and I had so much fun doing that that very quietly, we're probably going to found a company in September. We're putting out some feelers for some potential investment, which I'm completely comfortable with, and I know exactly what I'm getting into. It's going to be a very small amount of money, and we're going to quietly start building a technology for retail that I think is extremely exciting and nobody has figured out how to conquer yet.
That does sound exciting. Tell us a little bit about what Victory looks like to you today.
Yeah. So I like to think about Victory in two time frames, right? The first is daily. And what is daily Victory to me? Daily Victory to me is really about moving that ball an inch up the field every single day. And I'm a big believer in focus and starting one important project or task and completing it before you move on to the next one. And then I think long term, Victory is really just about building successful companies, right? And that comes in very many shapes and sizes. I think if you start in large industries, like I'm working with a supply chain company right now, and helping them scale. You know, I think if you start with large industries, large addressable markets, if you focus on just operating well, it'll be a success. There's going to be different variations as to how successful, but financially, they'll all be successful.
If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Listen more. That's it. That's something that I do now most of the time. But back then, when you're young and you feel like you know everything, and you can tell people what to do or adjust the way that they're doing things because you know better, you don't. That just comes with experience. Just listen, learn, and as you age, continue to learn because we're always learning. Like you're never done learning. You never know everything that you think you know. You know, I think it's interesting when you look at yourself as a person, like me in particular, I've noticed that when I get too high on myself, and think that I know everything, that's always when I make my biggest mistakes. And it's keeping that even keel and continuing to question yourself and then question other people and listen to what they say and learn.
Absolutely. Listening is something that we often hear our founders talk about as a key skill that really differentiates strong leadership. It's listening to your team, to the needs of the business, to your customers. So that really resonates. Dan, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. Really enjoyed having you on the call.
Thanks, Rachel. This was great.